Hello and welcome to the fifth Manx Footy part of the 2021 season. This week we're joined by Eric Clegg, a man that has forgotten more about Manx football than the rest of us know put together. We also look ahead to Saturday's games and reflect on FC Isle of Man's withdrawal from the FA Vars. As always, I'm joined by a man who once asked John Barnes to rap, Dave Norton.
Hi everyone.
How are you doing this week, mate?
Not too bad. How are you, mate? Alright.
Good. We had a week off last week, didn't we? The sort of the Super Manx Bank holiday concertinaed our week a bit.
It certainly did, yeah.
So we had to do the courier and all sorts of other boring stuff like that.
Yeah, being that you're a news guru these days, a news hound.
Very much in inverted commas.
Yeah, we don't always have enough time for the podcast these days, do we?
I always have time for the podcast, I'm going to say that, but you know, it's probably my child and such like. Maybe take precedence occasionally.
It is, but you know what we've done again this week?
What?
No biscuits.
No biscuits? Oh, I feel sorry, Eric. But Eric, yes, we're delighted to finally have you in. This is our fifth season of doing these ramshackle podcasts. And Eric, you've been one we've always been after, hasn't it?
It is.
You're our marquee signing, our Galactico. But we've got you in true one show style, because you've got a book to plug, haven't you, Eric?
Just a little.
Yeah. So it's called Striving for Success, easy for me to say. It's about St George's, Eric. Obviously, a club that's, in the time me and Dave have been covering Manx football, that have dominated things. But this is their 100th year. And people probably think, oh, St George's have only been around 20 years or so because of all the success they have. But they haven't, have they, Eric? They've been around since 2019. And you've written this book with the help of Paddy. 1919, with the help of Paddy Higgins, about origins, how they started, and everything about that. And it's another great book. Stats galore, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. It really is a must read for any Manx football fan, obviously, especially those of a Geordie's persuasion. But, I mean, you know, unsurprisingly, it's packed full of interesting stories about the history of Geordie's and stuff. It's well worth a read, isn't it?
Yeah. So, Eric, yeah, so obviously, people might not know the origins of St George's, but you want to forgive them, fill them in briefly?
Well, without shadow of a doubt, yeah, yeah. St George's actually started in 1919. Yeah. There were lads who came back from the First World War. And I think that, obviously, I wasn't involved in the First World War, but when they came back from the First World War, I think they realised that they were going to enjoy their leisure time. They weren't going to be work, work, work. It was going to be leisure as much as work. And they wanted to get involved in such activities as football, and that's basically what the Barrack Street Boys did. And with the help of the Reverend Jordan, William Jordan, who came over to take over the parish of St George's and the St George's Church, with that happening, the combinations basically laid the foundation for the club starting.
Yeah.
So William Jordan was an exceptional footballer. He was obviously gone to university at Oxford, and he was an outstanding centre forward, and he was picked up by professional clubs, even though he remained an amateur. Yeah. And he actually featured in a FA Cup semi-final, playing for West Bromwich Albion. I mean, that's no mean feat. All right, he lost the game, but he went on to play for England.
Yeah,
and they played against France, and they won 10-0, and he scored 5 of the goals. So. Wow. What more can you say about the man?
It's true to the saying that we picked up on the other day, that on Saturday he's scoring goals and on Sunday he's saving souls.
Well, there you are.
Because he was the Reverend, wasn't he?
He was. He was the kind of guy, according to one story, I mean, I think it's in the book, he got lads together, he told them stories, he was a bit like a preacher. I mean, I suppose he was the kind of Jesus of his day in the Isle of Man. He told them stories, and they all followed him, and he told them soccer's the game to play, not rugby. Yeah. Which is what was the top game on the island, and he converted them into soccer players, and St George's took off from there. And remarkably, they made two senior cup finals in the second and third year.
Wow.
So I mean, and that was all down to him.
Yeah.
I mean, Herbert Mackay also played for St George's. He was an outstanding winger, but it was the Reverend Jordan who scored all the early goals. He made St George's something that, you know, that other clubs hadn't done.
So it was, you know, that's a fascinating insight into the start of the club. But you must have found out things while you were researching for this book. I know you spent an hour in the library at the museum that you thought, flip it, that's really, I didn't know this. You know, there's probably things you've unearthed that have even shocked you, a man that knows everything about Manx football.
Well, one of the fascinating stories I found was, I mean, there are stories in here. I don't want to tell them all, of course, obviously. I want to leave some for everybody. But I can remember that in the early years, St George's were taken to task for a late start to a match. And they explained to the FA that the facilities they were offered by the home team were little more than a cow shed. So the FA went down, they had a look at the facility, and they actually found a cow in the shed.
So who was the other team? You must remember.
I just can't remember offhand. I think it would be inappropriate to say.
But obviously, speaking about facilities, I mean, one of the big stories you covered in this is Glencrutchery Road and the unveiling of the new ground and stuff. And obviously, it featured a certain Bobby Charlton, didn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, a lot of the lads who were first team or members of the committee put a lot of work in there at Glencrutchery Road to get the facility available. If you can imagine, they played previously on the top pitch at Nobles Park there near to the church. It was a small pitch and it was very subject to the weather. And I mean, I played on it. And if it was a bit greasy or damp, it just churned up and it was a complete mess.
Yeah.
So, of course, they wanted a facility that they could be very proud of. And then they ended up managing to get the facility at Glencrutchery Road. They worked very hard on the pitch. They were picking stones. They were doing all kinds of things. And it was a lot of the players and the committee that did the work. And then, of course, later on, they constructed the clubhouse. So now St George's went from being a pretty poor facilities, poor pitch, to suddenly one of the best facilities on the island. Certainly one of the best facilities in Douglas.
And we talk about, there's a section I like in the book, and it's the famous, is it famous saints? 40 famous saints. So it's, you pick out a play, you know, players that have sort of made their name synonymous with the club. Now, obviously, for our generation, the likes of Chris Jr. and his dad, Chris Sr. involved. Yeah. But there's other names, isn't there? Obviously, there was...
like Nelson Kane and people like that, you know.
Were there any players that you uncovered during in that stuff that you thought, this guy's sort of been forgotten about a bit?
Well, there's one particular name that stands out to me. I mean, I'd heard of him. I mean, the older people who I speak to or used to speak to at games used to talk about Colin Shaw. And I didn't really know an awful lot about Colin Shaw until I started to do the research. And then once I started to do the research, I discovered that he was a phenomenal goal scorer. He started, ironically, as a fullback at secondary school, but he was quickly put up into centre-forward spot because he had a phenomenal shot.
Yeah.
He used to be able to hit a ball like nobody else. And when he joined St George's in 1960, he was with St George's for 3 seasons, and he scored over 100 goals in those 3 seasons.
Flipping
from centre forward.
Yeah.
And as a result of his goals, as much as anything else, I mean it was a very good team at that time. They won the championship 2 years in a row, which they had never done before. They'd won the championship in 1957 for the first time. But then, because of Colin Shaw, basically, they won the championship again in 61 and 62.
That was their first golden age, really, wasn't it?
Well, that was part of their golden age, their first golden age, yeah. Yeah, but there was another guy called Jinx Kane. I'm not really sure why he was called Jinx Kane, other than that he used to jink around their fullback, I suppose. Yeah. But he was an outstanding winger who apparently... You see, everybody you talk to in the older generation... remember Jinx Kane. He played for Braddon, then he moved to St George's, and he was a phenomenal winger.
If I remember correctly about Colin Shaw, this is probably where you correct me now, he emigrated to New Zealand, didn't he, and had a good semi-pro career out there.
He did indeed, yeah. He went on then to play for New Zealand at the Olympic Games.
Wow. That's amazing, story, isn't it? So yeah, all these sort of trinkets are in the book. This Striving for Success, which is available now from you can get it at Glen Country Road, isn't it, Eric?
Well, you can get it from Paddy Higgins, yeah. As you say, the man who helped me with a lot of the information I needed for the book. So if you ring him, you contact him, and it's also in the lexicon.
Right.
If you want to purchase it, it's in the lexicon.
And just for those who want to know, Paddy's number is 496892.
Yeah, and it's £15, which I think is an absolute bargain. So Eric, we talked about the book. Now, obviously, this isn't the first one you've penned. I think it's five now, isn't it? If Hattie's later question is correct. He's not sure. He hasn't written that many. But it can't be an easy task to write a book, Eric. You know, even on something, a subject I know you love.
I think when you set off, if you have got a real interest in the subject, as you're indicating, then it does help. And as you do your research, you discover things that you didn't know. And then you want to find some more stories that people don't know. Because it's nice to be able to tell stories that people have not heard before or, you know, not had the privilege of knowing. And that's what makes it interesting and exciting. So, but I've only done books on things that I really enjoy and have had an affinity towards. Because otherwise, it would be hard. If it's a labour of love, then that's great. If it was... you asked to do something and you're half-hearted, it's not the same. So I've enjoyed what I've done. I've done obviously the centenary book. I started with the Colby book and St. George's. I made lots of friends at St. George's in my playing days and then afterwards. So I knew a lot of the people in St. George's, and it was nice to be able to write about them and to bring them to the fore, you know.
And you've talked about, like, I know you wrote the first book, you're obviously still working in, but the last ones you've been retired, that must make it a bit easier rather than having to, do you set yourself I'm going to do so many hours on the book this week, or?
Yeah, well, you're quite right. I mean, you could go mad if you overdid it. I think what I do is I set a couple of hours. I say I'll go down to the museum and I'll do so much research today. Mm. And then you just have a break. And I mean, at some point in time, actually, you do have brain fade. You want to stop and you want to have a break. I do. I set so many, just a short period of time, and you get more pleasure out of finding things in a short time than if you... I don't know how these people can sit at the museum for 6 hours. And I mean, I couldn't do it. I'd be absolutely mush.
I'm hoping Andy's asking this question because he's thinking about writing a book himself.
I don't know if you must have. I was going to say you must have to have a lot of self discipline to do it. You know, and say right as you say, I'm going to do it for 2 hours today. Because I remember the famous Friends episode. Dave went and this chat is it Ross that challenges Joey to write a script for his own thing, and it's a nightmare, isn't it? He keeps distracting himself and all sorts of things like that. But it must be hard to do. Now you've talked about your next project already, isn't it? This Colby book,
100 years of Colby.
Yeah. You did the 50-year half century.
I did the 50 years. Yes.
So does that mean a lot of the research is already there? Or are you going to take a fresh angle to it, or?
Well, the research for the first 50 years has already been done, but as you say, it's not just literally taking the first 50 years and copying and pasting it.
Yeah.
No, I'm rewriting it and trying to do something a little bit different so that the readers who have already read the Colby book will have a different slant on it and will be able to find other... Because I've found little bits that I didn't have in the other books, so they can look out for those, you know. And that's what helps, is, unearthing something else and making the book a little bit different. The second half of the 50 years, of course, will be completely new to me, even. And I haven't been as involved with Colby, so I'll be finding information and bits and stories that I didn't even know existed.
Now, I know you're a keen tennis player as well. Have you ever fancied doing a book on the local tennis scene?
Well, I must admit, I do admire lots of the players who I've seen play in tennis, especially Ronnie Ronan, for example, who won the Ireland Championship about a dozen times. It would be intriguing, but It would be a harder one to write, really, because players come in, players go. In Manx tennis, I think there are... I don't know where I'd start yeah. finish on that, really, yeah. to be perfectly honest. I think I might stick to safe ground and carry on with football.
Well, it extends to the question then. Have you been approached to do a biography of Dickie Gale yet?
That's definitely going to be a chapter in the Colby book.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it?
I think Dickie Gale would be better writing his own.
Now, we're going to talk a bit about the way we know you, really, about the football report in a minute, but... What I want to know, and what's always been a trademark of your books, has been statistics, Eric. And that's probably what most people know you for, you know, the team of the week, the stuff like that. It's statistics driven, isn't it? Now, you've talked about you played for Colby and stuff like that. Were you interested in your stats then, or even when you were a kid and stuff, or is it something that's come to you later in life?
No, I think I was always interested in stats. I was always interested in history.
Yeah.
So therefore, I suppose really, you read a lot about history, you read a lot of books, and I just acquired knowledge, and I was fascinated by facts and figures and stuff like that. So I've just carried it on, yeah. When I came into football, I just brought that with me, my love of stats. And when I stopped playing, because I didn't play for long, I played 220 games, I think it was, in the combination league.
It's a high level when we've played that. Don't worry about that.
It was just combination. I can remember the year I actually stopped, which is a bit of an interesting story. It was the last game I played was the end of the season 78-79. And I was playing for Colby against Malou. It was an end of season, nothing on it. Nothing of any significance at all.
A derby match, though, Eric.
A derby match, true. Yeah. Maybe I'd forgotten that. but a certain player went straight down my shin.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, he could have broken your leg there.
Yeah.
And this is a nothing game. Why would you do that? I hadn't had a single injury up to that point.
Yeah.
And my knees, my legs were all fine. And I just thought to myself, stop.
Yeah.
There's no point now in carrying on. Because you're only going to get slower and you might get hurt. So Bill Dale had mentioned to me many years earlier that if ever I stopped and if I wanted to get to stay involved... Come and report, come and do the stats.
Yeah.
And I followed, and I thought to myself, I'll go and ask Bill. And Bill said, certainly. And that's how I took off. Bill asked me to do the league tables and the goal scorers, and it just carried on from there, and I fully enjoyed it, you know. But obviously then my job changed, and I did have to give it up for a few years. But then once I got back into it again, having had a break, I was more enthusiastic than ever.
So I've got this vision at Eric Clegg Towers. You've got this, there's this office room with, there's just books and books of statistics. You're nodding.
Absolutely,
correct.
Yeah, I've got a lot of books. Yeah.
Right, that leads us nicely onto our Twitter questions, doesn't it, Dave?
It does, but I do feel we need to send a photographer around sometime to get a picture of Eric.
I've got a feeling it's a false wall. Like.
Yeah.
Only certain people are allowed in.
Yeah.
And all the books are handled with white gloves.
Of course. So the first question is someone who's following in your footsteps nowadays, he's Eric Clegg Mark II.
Yeah.
He's the Eric Clegg of the North, shall we say, Rory Poole. The first question is, has your match reporting style changed over the years, or have you stuck true to one style?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, Rory, I used to bump into him during games at Ramsey Youth Centre, and I remember him asking me that, asking me about reporting, and I told him to get in touch with it because... Yeah. I mean, we need reporters.
Yeah.
I mean, once we move on, then we will still have to have football reported. And,
exactly.
I'm delighted to hear that Rory is involved. You know, I mean, it's great to see it. As far as my reporting style is concerned, I think you can't but avoid changing and adapting and getting better, hopefully. because when you first start, you are naive. You just write down whatever comes to your mind. But then you read about other people's reports, you see, and you do adapt and you do change. And hopefully, as I say, you get better. So I would, when I look back on my early reports, which you can still read in the museum, of course, they weren't bad. They were precise. They were short. But I have adapted it, and hopefully now it's readable and people enjoy it. That's all I can ask, really, isn't it?
I think you've touched on it actually before when we were talking about the book. Your knowledge expands as well. So you'll have that bit of extra background. You'll know, oh, that guy's scored 5 in the last 3, especially with your amazing statistics to back it up. And you'll know that you can add that extra bit of colour to the report that perhaps when you first start out, I remember, I can't even remember who my first game was, but I remember going not knowing any of the players, but then when you come back the following season, you remember, oh, he played well last time, and actually always moved positionally changed, and I think that knowledge then in turn, you know, it shows in your report, I would hope.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you, mate. You're able to add a bit more meat to the bones, aren't you? And it just gives a bit more context to the whole story, the whole report, doesn't it?
Now, Rory is his style is puntastic. You know, Dylan Pickles is probably his favourite because
Eric included it in one of his headlines recently. I think
But his second question is, what's the best Manx football related pun you've used in a report? Now, as we say, we've had the Pickles headline several times. To be fair, you are on the sly a very good one for the headlines. There are usually some.
Well, I like it, and I can always remember many, many years ago, there was a David Carouche, and the first thing he used to ask me was, not how did the game go, who scored, what was the result, or anything like that, is, what's your headline? And I must admit, I often think about that after the match, or even during the match sometimes, hoping that a headline, a really, really smart headline, will come to your mind. Mm. I must admit, I've done quite a few different ones over the years, so it is hard to remember them all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you'd have given me a bit of notice, I might have thought, yeah, I'd love to be able to say what's my favourite one. Yeah. Next time I'm here, I'll give you an answer.
Wait, what about you?
Well, it's funny enough. I was looking through my Facebook memories the other day, and it was just last year I went to cover Blacksea versus Peel at Douglas Road, and it was Blacksea. It was a stat that Dudley Butt had produced, and another man that has stats close to his heart, that it was Laxey's first point in Peel since 2013, so 7 years or something like that, which was quite impressive, because you consider, you know, Laxey won the Grand Slam in the last 15 years and everything like that.
Yeah.
And it was David Corlett that scored the equaliser that earned them that point. And of course, his nickname is Screech, after the Saved by the Bell character. and it was, my headline was something like, Corlett has Laxey fans screeching. Yeah. And he put that on his Facebook, and I think it went viral, as the kids would say. But that would be my favourite one I can think of.
Well, Screech is still living off the royalties of that headline. He loves it.
What about you?
I don't know. I have to admit, I'm not that good at headlines at all. I mean, you know this. I'm just not that particular.
You're more of a Rod Steele man, aren't you?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, we talk back on our first reports and stuff like that, and my first game was Moran versus Ayres, Division 2 title clash. This is 11 years ago this week now. Yeah. And I, like you said a few minutes ago, about you turn up your first match, don't know many of the players. And there was only a couple of players that I knew in that match. One of them was Mikey Wheeler.
Yeah.
And he just so happened to score a free kick from the halfway line in injury time to win it for Moran. And I can't remember what the headline was. It would have been something rubbish, but now looking back, it would have been too easy to go for something like Moran look the wheel deal in title race sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I've never had a good brain for the headlines, unfortunately.
Wheels come off and all that. Yeah. All right, next question is probably from one of the 40 Super Saints, I think you called them.
Yeah.
Eric is from Callum Morrissey, who is in the FC Alaman squad, which we'll talk about a bit in a minute. But he says, "What's the greatest Manx football game you've watched?"
Well, I would suggest to you that when you talk about the greatest, maybe the most significant match stands out to mind to me. And that was when we went to Cambridge to the final of the whatever it was known
NLS
as.
NLS Cup, point. That National League Systems Cup.
Systems Cup or whatever. And Cambridge was so confident of victory. You know, it was a case of all we've got to do is appear on that pitch, score a few goals, pack our bags, and we're off to Europe.
Yeah.
And the chairman, honestly, it was embarrassing. We were all invited to a lunch prior to the game. He was embarrassing. He didn't even mention us. All he mentioned was the fact that they were on their way to Europe for the first time.
And it was at Cambridge United's ground, wasn't it?
The Abbey Stadium, yeah.
So a league ground as well.
That's right.
What was the final score? 3-4-1?
It was convincing. Even 5-1, I'm not sure. But he did actually crack one joke, which I thought was quite funny. He said, when I heard we were playing the Isle of Man, I thought the final would be held over three legs.
That is a joke that has been reused most recently, but I think by TalkSport, they've done the FC Isle of Man interviews. But yeah.
All right. Okay.
But yeah,
a momentous
day, though. Though
that's well, that was a fantastic day. The first half, to be fair, I thought they did sneak the first half. They put loads of corners in, but our defence held firm. And then in the second half, we just couldn't stop. I think it might have been 4-0, actually. Mm. We actually couldn't stop scoring goals. Mm. And we won comfortably. And, you know, the stadium just emptied and everybody went home.
I think my most memorable one, and we've talked about it before, the unbelievable match. And I don't know if you were at that one game, Eric. It was when we played the Liverpool County League at the Bowl. And went something like 3-0.
We were 3-0 down at half time.
Came back to win 5-3. Another game that Callum was heavily involved in that match. But we had a snowstorm. There was kids invading the pitch.
Thunder, lightning,
everything happened in that match. Yeah. The highlight reel itself would have been about 90 minutes, let alone. Yeah. You know, it just that everything happened in it.
Yeah, it was just one of those games that's always going to stick in our minds. Yeah. You know,
I think, as you say, I mean, that is a game like no other.
Yeah.
You'll never have a repeat performance like that. As you say, they came back from 3-0 down. Yeah. The weather changed
dramatically.
Typical Isle of Man, I suppose, in a way. But even so, it was a remarkable game that year.
Yeah. And then most recently, I'm going to touch on it, in the FC Isle of Man game against Guernsey. I think I'll remember the fact that I was there
It was an historic occasion, wasn't it?
Yeah. And there was the atmosphere and the occasion, as you say, the occasion made that match. And it was great to talk and do our job with the people after the match, speak to Paul and Chris Jr. and people we know have been there through our careers as well.
Exactly, and it's a day which will go down in history. You know, however this FC Isle of Man story plays out, that was the
kicking off point.
The kicking off point, us at least. I mean, obviously there was a lot of work that went on behind the scenes, but for us and for most people to see it come to fruition, it was memorable, wasn't it?
What your Partners in Crime, one of the book, was obviously the Hit Manhattan, who was on one of our first podcasts this season, Eric, and he says that this is the fifth book you've written, co-written on various Manx football topics. Which one do you feel is the best one, most rewarding to date?
It's a very difficult question. I mean, I've had a bit of warning here, you've already done, but I suppose the most rewarding one was the one I did with Hattie. Mm. Because we tried to put as much information into it as we could. We were trying to appeal to as many different people as we could so that they would get enjoyment out of it. Photographs are important, but then there's a lot of written words there. I would say that was probably the most rewarding.
I have to say, it's a book we still use to this
all the time. Yeah.
All the time we use it.
Well,
because it's got so much information in it.
Yeah,
I feel like it was 2012.
12.
It's 8 years old, and I feel like I've only scratched the surface with it. And that's with me using. You know, weekly.
We have to drop in, obviously, that it was a best-selling book. That
know this.
I mean, this is what I was told. I mean, it could be wrong, but I was told that it was the top-selling book over Christmas in 2012.
I can understand that because, as you said, the broad appeal was there. You know, with yes. the St. George's book, you might think, oh, that's a bit more St. George's.
That subject. Won't sell many in Peel.
But I think with the other one, you did try to cover every club's in there, but also junior football, women's football, the referees, every element of Manx football, it has its place in that book. And it's amazing. We talked before we started recording about condensing things, and the fact you've got it into that that amount of pages is a credit to yourself and Hattie. But yeah, this next question you've already touched on, really. It was about what's your sort of favourite memory from reporting on a football match off Ireland. 2006, obviously, Cambridge, you were there. You've been to a few Ireland games as well, Eric. Is there any of the Ireland games that stand out for you particularly?
I suppose you could say, really, when it comes to the Ireland games, every Ireland games has something is different.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore you get different pleasures from different reasons and whatnot. I mean, when we went to Åland in 2009, I actually drove to Åland.
You had the
from
kid,
here. Yeah. Well, there were two of us. We had a van each.
Yeah.
And we took the football kit and also additional other kit as well. And we drove from here to over to Sweden and then across to Åland on the ferry. So that was exciting as much as anything else.
How long did that take?
It took us 2 days to get to the island and then 2 days to get back home.
Yeah.
But I mean, the trip up to Shetland, I enjoyed that as well. I mean, I'm not a very good flyer, so therefore I welcome the idea of staying on, you know, keeping my feet on the ground or on the wheels or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they've all got and had great pleasure going to report and to enjoy the games. I mean, obviously, I didn't have the pleasure of being at the final when we won the game.
Dave was there for that, weren't you?
Well, I envy you, really.
Yeah, Hattie was covering the match and I was elsewhere, but I was able to get there for the last 15, 20 minutes. And obviously, to actually, when the final whistle went for them to actually get it, it was...
It was Greenland, wasn't it, I think, in the final?
Yes,
it was. You know, without disrespect to them, when Guernsey were beaten in the semi, you almost thought, we've got one hand on the trophy now. Because Guernsey were the traditional rivals. And I know there's a lot of discussion about that Guernsey squad because it was the end of a very hard season for Guernsey FC, and I think the FA used it as a bit of a development tool.
Yes,
but nevertheless, it was a 3-2 last minute Callum winner, wasn't it?
It was pretty much a watershed moment, really, wasn't it, for the Ireland Games team? So to be there to see, I mean, you know, Hattie had been the one that had followed the journey throughout those games, but to be there at the end to see what it meant to the players was pretty special.
Did you go to Gibraltar for the Shield? Do you remember when they
I didn't. No,
that was, I think Hattie went to that one actually, but I just wondered about that one because obviously I was in the Ireland at the Ireland Games in Gibraltar
last year, a long time ago.
And obviously football wasn't at that one. It was in Anglesey. I think you went to that, didn't you?
I was going to go, but unfortunately my health didn't permit.
But the Gibraltar, it would have been interesting to see because obviously now they beat San Marino the other night to they're in UEFA. At that time we were sort of, I think we lost 2-1 maybe that day. I can't remember off the top of my head in that international tournament. I think it was to mark the centenary of the FA, wasn't it? The English FA, and or maybe the Gibraltar FA. But it was there was two or three. I think one of the Channel Islands were there as well. I'm rambling, but yes, it would have been interesting to get your perspective on how we compared to Gibraltar then, and obviously now they're fully UEFA member, and FIFA now, aren't they, them both?
But I suspect that they will have brought players in, they will have found players with real talent and ability to play in for Gibraltar. I don't think it's the side that we played in the Ireland Games at any point, really. I mean, maybe one or two of them are still involved.
Mm.
But I must admit that when we played them in the second time we played in the Ireland Games in Gibraltar in that stadium, and the whole stadium, it's only a small place, that stadium maybe holds 3,000, I don't know how many, 3,500, was packed from well over an hour before kickoff.
Wow.
I mean, that was fantastic. We weren't in the final, They were. It was at the Isle of Wight they played in the final.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But they were. They had a full stadium for every game they played in the Ireland games that year. When they played us.
Yeah.
And the famous incident when Mark Gorman kicked a bottle.
Yeah.
But I mean, say no. They beat us. But then they, as I say, filled the stadium every time and the final. And I suppose it was. I had a little bit of a wry smile when the Isle of Wight nipped in the last minute and scored a winner and pinched the trophy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think everybody else thought Gibraltar were going to win it as the host, because the hosts normally do well in the Ireland Games.
Well, they were very passionate supporters. I remember the Ireland Games. I was in the sports hall watching the Isle of Man basketball, men's basketball team play Jersey. It's at the same time that the Gibraltar men were playing one of the Scandinavian Islands, I think. And it was absolutely packed. The noise they were making in the sports hall was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But they're very passionate about the sport.
Yeah.
Right, moving on. We're also going to just talk briefly about FC Isle of Man. Dave, we've had the news this week that they're actually not, they've withdrawn from the FA Vars, so won't be playing AFC Liverpool in next weekend.
Yeah.
It wasn't the 19th it was meant to be.
It's not a complete surprise. Obviously, this was a very real possibility for a while with the ongoing border restrictions. But a statement released on Tuesday basically confirmed that because of the ongoing border restrictions, they've been in conversation, in discussions with the Ireland government, but it's just not possible for that game to go ahead. They can't bring Liverpool over.
It was meant to be,
it was meant to be at the Bowl on the 19th of September. So, yeah, unfortunately, it does mean that they're not going to play in the Vars this season, which is a shame. Talks are still ongoing, obviously, surrounding the actual North West Counties Football League season. That's due in another month, isn't it?
Yeah, October 3rd should have been their first game. The fixtures for that have actually been released, and I think we're home to Withenshaw Town, is it?
Yes, you well remembered.
And then I think our first away game is in Didsbury, in Chulham.
Yes, so it's just near Manchester, isn't it?
Yeah, but now, obviously, Boris Johnson's statement yesterday about the reduction of numbers of people that can gather at the same time will have an impact on that, even though he did say sport wouldn't be affected.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this plays out now over the next few weeks, but it's obviously a very fluid situation, so we just have to keep an eye on this. In the meantime, obviously, the Ravens have got a match in Guernsey this weekend.
Yes, it's the second match. They've obviously, we talked about the first one happening a couple of weeks ago, middle of September. They are now away for the return leg in Guernsey at Foots Lane this weekend. Again, it looks like the tickets have sold well, doesn't it?
It does. I'm expecting a raucous crowd down there for that. But
they're playing for the Skipton Cup, which will be played for annually between the two teams.
Yeah, it's just been announced this. So obviously, it's a nice to challenge for a little bit of silverware, isn't it? So Chris Bass named his squad earlier this week.
16
of them, and six of them are from Corinthians. So we'll go through the squad.
Yep.
Goalkeeper is Dean Kearns from Russian. The defenders, you've also got Russians Adam Cool and Alex Maitland, along with St George's Sean Quay, and then Corinthians duo Ryan Burns and Chris Cannell. St Mary's duo Jack McVeigh and Frank Jones are in the midfield, as are Russians Jack Kamada, and then Geordie Sid Batty, and Corinthians Steve Whitley and Dan Simpson. And then up front, you've got Luke Murray and Sean Doyle from Corinthians, plus Geordie's duo Kieran McNulty and Callum Morrissey.
Yeah, we should just touch on Jack. Obviously, started the season at Peel and has made a switch over the Old Firm divide to Russian.
Only a week ago, yes. He was on the bench for Russian the other day. I was covering the Corinthians Lexi game, but on the adjacent pitch was Royal Russian, and he came on late on. It'd be interesting to see what his playing time is like for Russian. I think they've had a couple of injuries with the likes of Greg Norris and Mike Williams, so potentially opens the door for him to play.
So that obviously that's a 6:30 kickoff on Saturday night. I'm sure the FC Isle of Man boys will be doing their best on social media, so please do follow them if you want to see how that one turns out. Of course, we'll have pictures and a report in Tuesday's Isle of Man Examiner. Right, Eric, while we've got you in, we'll look ahead to Saturday's games in the Cadwaladr Premier League and JCK Division 2. We're going to start at the game I'm going to go to on Saturday afternoon. Down at Croyte Lowry, it's Russian versus St Mary's. I know both teams will be shorn of some of their leading lights, but I think that will probably make this one a tighter game than maybe expected.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, obviously, it would be interesting to see how Russian's backline and goalkeeper is, obviously with Dean and Maitland and Cool off to FC Alamance. So yeah, it'll be interesting. St Mary's, I mean, any side's going to miss the likes of Jack McVay and Frank Jones, aren't they? So how it's going to line up for them, I don't know. But Steve Priestnell's back in form, got a couple of goals last week. And as Eric will say with his stats, there were two strikers in Team of the Week. One was Priestnell, and the other one was Kieran McNulty. So how many goals, Eric? Over 600, was it?
They've scored over 600 between them in the Premier League, in the history of the Premier League. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, Rush and Eric were many people's pre-season tips to take the title this season. Obviously, a season that's going to be affected by FC Alamance's movement into the English non-league system. But they've got so many attacking players at their disposal, even while missing the names we've already mentioned. They should have the firepower to see off St Mary's this weekend, shouldn't they?
Well, you would have thought so. Yes, I agree, but... It's interesting with this FC Isle of Man factor coming into play. They are going to miss the players, certainly at the back, Cool and Maitland, who have been outstanding. Mm. I mean, and quite rightly, they're favourites. But I wouldn't disregard Corinthians. I know they're going to lose a lot of players, but Corinthians will. You know, to me, they're going to give them two good games over the course of the season. They could be, well, I'm sure everybody's said this before, but they will be the pivotal games, I would guess.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But again, the FC Isle of Man, that's going to play a part.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Something.
Sometime. Elsewhere, Dave, the game Eric's actually going to see St John's versus Ayr United. St John's currently propping up the standings, aren't they, if my memory is correct?
They certainly are. They've played 6, drawn 2, lost 4 so far. Tough start of the season.
Yeah.
But
Ayr have bounced back after an equally tough start of the season. They've picked up a couple of wins in recent weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, and Eric was at their game last week against Moran, weren't you? And it was a good second half showing from Ayr, wasn't it?
I thought they were very impressive second half here. First half, Moran took advantage of a bit of a slack defence, but second half here were excellent. I thought I was going to watch St George's versus Douglas Royal, actually.
Well, you can go where you want, Eric. But yeah, Ayr should be favourite for this one, though, shouldn't they? Against St John's.
Yeah, well, I think on the form that was the first time I watched them. I would say on that form, if they play like that and they do look a good side, yes, I would say that St John's will find it great difficulty in holding them. Yeah,
Ramsey versus Douglas Athletic, Dave. Two teams that look fairly well matched in the league standings at least. Ramsey have started well already this season.
Yeah, 3 wins out of the 4 games. They are flying. You know, you would. In some seasons, you'd say that I'd almost make them safe from relegation already. But, you know, obviously it's a long season ahead. It will be close, this one. We have to mention the X factor that is Douglas Athletic goalkeeper Adam Kinvey. having scored a brace last weekend. Yeah. Who knows what will happen this weekend. But, yeah, no, this will be a tough game. I'm going to side with Ramsey. I think they'll probably just edge this one, but it will be close.
Now, Adam Kinvey, he must be the highest scoring goalkeeper in one match in the Manx Premier League, Eric, I would say. I can't remember. Occasionally we get goalkeeper scoring. It is few and far between. There was a spell where Andy Glover used to sort of start one game in goals and end up front for the second half. And obviously he had a very successful spell at St John's up front. So, this is the first time I've seen a goalkeeper remaining in goal and scoring 2 goals.
Well, and that pitch that they have... does lend itself to the goalkeeper taking 3 hits and certainly potentially scoring goals.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get into a habit now of taking 3 kicks from that position.
So, well, who do we think, if you're going to put your 50p on the line, Ramsey or Douglas Athletic?
I haven't watched Douglas Athletic, I would have to say, but from all reports, they're having their usual season, you know, a little up and down, but... But they've got some talented players in there, so they often cause one or two surprises. But Ramsey, they've surprised me this season. I saw them in the first game of the season. They managed to just nip past Moran. Yeah, it's good to see that. It's good to see Ramsey. Teams from the north are doing well. So I think a draw to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's probably right there. Yeah. The Dave Norton Memorial
Defence. Yeah. You mentioned Andy Glover there. I just have to give an honourable mention to Screech. Obviously, we were talking about him before. Back when he used to play for Laxey 14-16.
With Mark Cavendish.
I remember a trip up north to Andreas one day, and Screech started the game in nets. I think we were about four-nil up at half-time. So Screech ended up going up front. I had to go in goals in this game. This my finest hour for Laxey because I saved a penalty. But Screech, I'm pretty sure he scored in that second half. So I know that's a junior game, but still technically he deserves a mention because he has scored when they're starting in it.
Blackberry Lane, Dave, old boys take on Peel. Now Peel, the Peel faithful will be looking at the league table with increasing worry. But they have had a tough start to the season. I said in my pre-season preview, 4-5-1, it was going to be a year of transition as they bring all these youngsters through, having lost some of their more leading lights, shall we say.
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's the dark before the dawn, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I mean, they've got a lot of talented youngsters in there. I know, Eric, reading your match reports, the likes of Charlie Higgins has impressed you.
Yeah.
Things like that. You know, there are positive signs there for the Westerns. It's just getting through this period, isn't it? This will be a game they've been targeting to win. All boys know they're going to be fired up for it. For those who don't know, obviously it's been a bit of a tricky, well, very difficult couple of weeks for them. Their young player Jack Townsend fell ill, but I've been in contact with Tommy Miller, and the signs are positive there. I obviously can't go into detail, but it is looking good. So fingers crossed for a speedy recovery for Jack. Obviously, away from that, Old Boys are keen to get some points on the board as well because they are currently in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
So this is a battle of two of the bottom three, which you wouldn't have thought.
No, even a few years ago, you know, this would have been I remember Railway Cup ties between the pair, and there's been some cracking games between these two in the recent years. And I'm sure Saturday will be the same, but maybe for different reasons. Peel to pick the points up here, Eric, or can you see Old Boys getting something out of it?
It's a very difficult question. I was very, very disappointed with Peel against Corinthians. They were well and truly beaten that night. And they just about squeezed past St John's, to be perfectly honest. So they have got problems, but it's because they've got five key men missing, really.
Yeah.
They certainly need Wood and Woods, I would suggest. Old Boys, if they hit form, they could certainly give Peel a shocker. Again, maybe a draw.
Yeah.
Maybe this is going to be the week for draws.
Elsewhere, Morale take on Corinthians at the Memorial Playing Field. I think it's their second home fixture since the season has come to its end. This to me looks an away win, Dave, but FC Allen and Factor, they've lost six this weekend.
Exactly. This is it. I mean, who knows what sort of lineup they're going to have. Corinthians, you know, and I'm sure they'll admit this, they weren't at their best against Laxey last weekend. They had to dig deep to get that win against a very good Laxey side. But I mean, if you can have a so-called below par day and still score five goals against Laxey, you are doing something right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they line up. I imagine the likes of Adam McCulloch will be given a chance. Obviously, he's in red-hot form in the combi. But yeah, around, you know, they'll might be a bit confident going into this one, but I still think the whites will be too strong on the day.
Eric, obviously we've talked about Corinthians combi in the past. By my maths, which is nowhere near as good as yours, I would say that they're undefeated in the league since 2018. December 2018 was the last time Corinthians combi lost.
Yeah.
The strength and depth there, we've talked about the FC Alaman project. This is where it does benefit. It gives other people a chance to shine, doesn't it?
Well, I agree. It certainly is going to level the playing field, without a shadow of a doubt. The only thing I would say about Moran, I feel desperately sorry. I watched Moran a couple of times this season, and it's just that final quarter of the field that their problems lie. In defence, they're one a solid unit. And I've been impressed with them this season.
They always work hard, don't they?
They do. But it's getting the ball into the opponent's net. Yeah. That's their problem.
And we talked about it when Ash Higginbotham moved back to St George's. We said this is going to be the out because the season before I think he'd scored 15 goals-ish around that mark, and it was replacing him in that side. They brought a few players in over the summer, bizarrely four goalkeepers, I think.
Yeah.
But none of them were, we thought, well, they're maybe not going to fill that mantle. Harry Barnes, to be fair, is having a go, isn't he?
He is.
He's sort of developing over this last couple of seasons. I did see, on social media this week, he'd been monkey-brained at the weekend.
Ah, oh, doesn't surprise me.
If yeah. Turning up in the Crosby in his full kit. So, yeah, I thought, you know, a fairly just punishment.
Yeah,
so
fair enough, isn't it? Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this game, this is going to be an intriguing match. I'm still going to favour the away side, I think, even with their six players away. I think they have that strength and depth that maybe some other clubs don't. So I think they could. But it'd be interesting to see who does step up, as you say.
Yeah, it will. You know, obviously, McCulloch is the one you look to, but there's just a very strong team across the board.
The one that's been caught my eye, in the results at least, is that João Marques, who played for Royal last season, I think.
Yes, of course, he scored last weekend.
Yeah, he scored a few already this season. So.
Yeah, you can't forget the Ridings. You've got Kane Ridings is there, with plenty of first-team experience for him.
Josh as well.
Josh, yeah, so, I mean, yeah. The strength of depth is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Last game in the Premier League on Saturday is the game Eric's going to. St George's versus Douglas Royal. This, to me, also looks like it should be a home win, Eric. Obviously, they're going to be missing a couple with Callum and Kieran away with FC Isle of Man. But, again, we talk about strength and depth. Geordies do have a fairly strong combi these days. You'd think there'd be the younger players there to step up. And... Yeah.
Well, I think that's what balances it off a little bit. Douglas Royal are a young side, basically. St George's are a young side as well. So it'll be the battle, really, of the up-and-coming players, won't it? So that's what makes it intriguing. St George's have lost Sean Quay from the back, but I'm sure they can replace him. I think that'll be... It will be an intriguing game. I think St George's should win, really, shouldn't they? But... Douglas Royal will certainly put up a good fight. No question.
You talk about the youngsters. Actually, these two were the top two in the under-18s league when it was called off in March.
Yes.
They were the title winner was going to come from one of these two clubs. So that gives you a slight indication of what to expect on Saturday. We are sort of looking around the curtain of the next generation, as it were. Dave, you think Royal can get anything out of this, or
you know what? It wouldn't surprise me. As I say, I watched a little bit of their game against Russian on Saturday, and I was impressed with them. They just fearless. They just go for it. I mean, it didn't matter who they were playing against. I watched the end of the first half and the end of the second half, and they ended up conceding in the 49th minute, went in 4-3 down, which obviously had a big impact because Russian just ran away with it in the second half, but. You know, if that's it any different, if they go in at 3-0, who knows? They play with a lot of confidence. We've got a lot of good youngsters there. There's no reason why they can't. But I have to say, I do think Geordies will be too strong with this one.
Yeah. My worry with Royal, and I think I've discussed it on the podcast previously, with them just maybe missing an experienced head or two. Now, I know James Halliday's there, Craig Dolman's there. They've played a lot of football. But I don't know, maybe you just need one more just to get them through this. You know, someone that says, you know, don't chase that down or whatever.
Yeah.
And we talked about a lack of a goal scorer as well if Tom Chattel goes to university.
Yeah.
I think Sam Baines is a top scorer. And Eric
Brady, Carl Watson got a couple last weekend, so he's obviously one to watch as well. But
Sam is a midfielder, isn't he?
Exactly, so.
Yeah. Right, JCK Division 2 this weekend. 6 games in this division as well. All of the Saturday's matches kick off at 2:30. The top game is the current, or the two that were predicted to be in the top two places when the season comes to a close in May. Rycott versus Union Mills. Dave, Mills have, you know, they've ticked every box so far, haven't they?
6 wins out of 6. Absolutely banging the goals in for fun. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously going to go into this as favourites. We've got our man in the north going to this one, Rory, so it'll be, I imagine there'll be lots of goals in this one. He's still reeling from that defeat a couple of weeks ago, so, you know, they'll be keen to get it right. It could go either way, this one. I am going to sit on the fence because I just can't call it. I know I say it's going to be goals galore. I hope it isn't 0-0 now for Rory, but it should be an exciting game anyway.
Mills have started well, Eric. It's good to up and running and get the points on the board, isn't it?
Well, I would say that Union Mills are red-hot favourites to get promotion. I would suggest to you, David, that Ramsey Youth Centre have been a little bit, and All Boys have been a little bit inconsistent, really. Mm. You know, they've slipped up. And I think they'll slip up this week. I think Union Mills will win.
Yeah, I'm with
Eric. To be perfectly honest.
I think if Youth do win, it does pull Mills back in a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, at the moment, Mills are already 8 points clear of Youth, but Youth have got a game in hand, so it is vital that Youth get something from this.
At this early stage.
Even looking away from Youth, like Colby are currently in second, they're still 5 points behind Mills, so that is a big gap this early in the season. So,
talking of Colby, they take on Foxdale down at the Station Fields. Colby have started well. Charlie Ober has had a good start to his managerial tenure down at the Station Fields. They play a Foxdale team that started well, but have had a couple of off days in recent weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, they lost to Jim's last week, didn't they? Which not many people saw coming. Obviously, Jim's have got a good side, but I don't think anyone really fancied them to get the 3 points there. So, yeah, it's vital that Foxdale bounce back. And when, we mention him so often, like Jay Chatwood, certainly knows where the back of the net is. How many did he get against Paulie the other week?
Was it a ridiculous amount, yeah.
13
goals. So, he's obviously in form, but difficult one to call this one. I have to go with Colby. I think they'll edge past the visitors.
Eric, your old club?
Well, not only my old club, but of course, as we've indicated, I'm writing a book. Mm. I'd be very disappointed if Colby don't do particularly well this season, because if they do, people will want to read all about it. but Foxdale, you never write Foxdale off, do you?
No.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I obviously hope Colby win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Foxdale did.
I think the home team might just sneak this, as much as it pains me to say this as a Foxdale boy. Jim's versus Braddon, another potentially close game, and the game that Hattie is going to go and cover on Saturday. Jim's have sort of come onto our radar with that result last week, Dave.
They have. I mean, they're up to fifth at the table. They've had a mixed start to the season in terms of three wins and three defeats, but if you'd given them fifth place a few weeks ago, they'd have snapped your hand off, I'm sure. Carl Gartland's got them playing good football, by the sounds of it. And obviously, Connor Dempsey is a talent, and they've got other good players there as well. So I think they'll start this as favourites, but obviously, Braddon had a big win last weekend as well. They beat Pulley 17-1. So Lee Currer got a double hat-trick in that game. So obviously, the goals are flying in for them, but... No, I think in this one the home side will have a bit too much about them.
Laundrymen take the points in this one.
Jim's are the oldest club in Douglas,
right?
Just as a small matter of fact, and they've had a tremendous history over the years. They were one of Manx, the very early successful sides. They seem to be picking up, don't they?
Yeah,
that's the good news.
Yeah,
Braddon. A little bit disappointing, really. I think Jim should win, really, to be honest, on current form. If if they're going to continue this run of good form, then they should beat Braddon, really.
Elsewhere, we've got Castletown taking on Michael down at the stadium. Again, they're doing well. We've talked about this. Both teams, actually, have done well to get two sides out this season after struggling for numbers prior to the season start.
Yeah, this didn't look like it was going to happen, did it, a few weeks ago? But, yeah, credit to both teams. It's going to be a tight battle, and there's only 3 points between the two teams. Michael are down near the foot of the table. Castletown aren't that far ahead, but Castletown, after that win against Malou in the Southern Derby, I think they're going to be buoyed by that, aren't they? I think there's some positive signs there. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a Castletown win in this one.
Castletown, Eric, obviously got the stadium, which has some amazing attendance figures, doesn't it, back when it first opened?
Yeah. One of the record attendances at the stadium was a women's football match, would you believe? On the Isle of Man, it was at the stadium. But, I mean, Castletown were the top club on the Isle of Man many, many years ago. And in the 1950s, they were a very successful club. And it's very, very sad to see their demise, really. In fact, at one point, we thought they were going to drop out of Manx football. And even that suggested that might happen to Michael at some point. I mean, another club that have had a long history in Manx football. So, coming back up to date, I think, obviously, Castletown will be too strong for Michael, won't they?
I think it'll be close, though. I think this could be one of what we refer to as a classic Manx scoreline of maybe 5-3 or 6-4 or something. There will be goals. Because we've discussed this back, one of your amazing stats before, Eric. There's only been 13-14 clean 0-0 draws in the history of the Premier League since 2007.
Yeah,
something
yeah,
like that.
That's right.
So clean sheets aren't really Manx football's friend, are they?
You do like a Manx scoreline. Well, Michael's last match was against Colby last week. It was 9-2. So
peak Manx football that one.
Yeah.
Onken versus Douglaston District. Now we talked about Andrew Doss's successful start to his time in the hot seat at Nobles Park. Stroke. Yeah, spring.
Yeah, Grose Road.
Grose Road. Right? You were right. I saw them playing. That they played there last week, didn't they?
Yeah, it's a once in a lifetime that I'm right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Onken D&D, they've started well. Does that mean D&D make D&D favourites for this weekend's game?
You can argue that. Yeah, I mean obviously they're up in third at the moment, which is really good for them. I think they play with obviously a lot of confidence. So I don't see why not. They will fancy their chances. Onken. We've said it for years, they're a Jekyll and Hyde side. We never know what Ogden side are going to turn up. Obviously, there's already been a managerial change there this season.
Yeah. Well, they say change. David Rees is back.
He's back, yeah. But obviously, last week they got a good win against Governors Athletic. It was 6-1, and Governors are a renewed force this season, aren't they? So they're rolling back the years, and they had Paul Whitley and Mark Wolfenden scoring the goals for the O's. So it's going to be a tight one. I've got to call a draw.
You couldn't call a draw. Good to see Wolfie back playing, actually, because his back injuries threatened to derail his career, or end his career prematurely, I'm going to say, Wolfie, because I know you're not too far off my age. But, as you say, there's some combined age on them, too.
There is. I think, we're chatting to Wolfie on social media last week, this is his seventh club. I actually thought he had more than that.
But he'd been at Onken
So he's still battling out with Andy Glover for the most clubs, but it's some way to go, yeah.
Who do you think is going to take the points in this one, Eric?
I would love to say Onken, because they're a sleeping giant, aren't they?
They have that catchment area. Yeah, well, not have many more.
In all fairness, they are really a Premier League team who just haven't really got to a situation where they've knocked on the door.
Have they been in the top flight before?
They have been. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Mm. They've. I'm just trying to think in my mind whether they've actually won the title or not. I think they have. Right. I think they won one league title.
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if they could get into the Premier League?
Yeah.
You know, because as you say, they're a magnificent catchment area. They've got tremendous possibilities, but they just don't seem to be able to get over that hurdle.
No. Consistency.
What we say about them.
Maloo versus Governors Athletic rounds out your second tier action this Saturday. Maloo, probably, well, they're going to start this one as favourite. You say Govs are a renewed force this year.
Yeah,
I think this one's got draw written all over it.
I think you're probably right, and we can't forget it's a Tony Seale derby. We love a Tony Seale derby. There's so many of them in Manx football. I mean, Maloo, obviously, they were on the wrong end of a defeat to Union Mills last week, but they've got a good squad there. You know, Paddy Cooper, Dan McLaughlin are scoring goals. You know, I imagine on paper they'll start as favourites, but Governors have shown they're no pushovers this year. So I'm with you on this one. I think they've got to share the points.
Eric?
Well, I think Maloo will do it. I think Governors actually have peaked. They peaked early on, didn't they?
They peaked with the move to Colby.
that magnificent result they had early in the season. Was it against Paul Rose?
Yeah. Yes.
I got a feeling Maloo will win that one.
We just had a death stare from a resident Governors Athletic player over there.
Yeah, Sam Turton, Governors Evils there. But so basically what you're saying is you don't hold a grudge against Maloo for ending your playing career.
No, not really.
Right, before we leave today, we've got the important business of Combi Corner and Dave Reed's weather. We'll start with Combi Corner, Dave.
Yeah, well, you've already mentioned the Corinthians. They just march on in Combi 1. They made it 4 wins out of 4. Just the 11 goals this week. They beat Laxey 11-4. Adam McCulloch, he backed 6 of them. Kane Ryan's also got a hat-trick. Had the likes of Callum Gamble and Jean Marquez as well. Elsewhere...
That was a strong Laxey as well. I'm just looking at the scorers they had. Chris Ashbridge, George Burrows and Sam Greasley have all played first team in the last sort of couple of seasons. So
very good. So it'd be interesting to see which of these players will now go up into the first team with some of the Laxey Uni players going. Chatting to Max Murley this morning, and he thinks that George Burrows is going to come in and do a job, things like that. So it will be interesting. Second place Ramsey, they weren't in action last week, but Geordie's Peel, they played out a 2-2 draw. at Glen Crutchley Road. Ben Wasser and Lucas James netted for the Saints. Liam Leiston and Tom Brown netted for the Westerners. Just round the corner at Blackberry Lane, Old Boys are 3-1 winners over Douglas Athletic. Dean Kinley, the evergreen Dean Kinley.
Talking about goal-scoring goalkeepers.
That's it. He bagged a brace, joined on the score sheet by Dominic Dawson, and Kevin Kinraid scored for the Pinks. Although I have to say, the Pinks aren't really the Pinks anymore. Have you seen their new kit?
No.
It's pretty much identical to Old Boys away kit.
Which is?
It's like a black with sort of maroon sleeves.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so...
So it's maroons rather than the Pinks. But yeah. We're out of the maroons.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there. They must still have a pink kit somewhere.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
We always digress.
Yeah.
Never mind. The biggest winners of the day, Ayr United, won 7-0 against Moran. Harvey Cleeter, Phil Dunningan both got 2 goals. Rob Ray, and Will Swithinbeck and Ryan Tierra both scored. And then Dan Corey, Larry Russian were 3-1 winners over Douglas Royal. Jamie Cadwallader, Jake Kelly and Dan Shuttleworth scoring the goals for the Spaniards, with Simon Dooley netting for the Whites.
I wouldn't realise Jamie'd move from Castletown, so that's a good sign for Russian. He scored a few goals for Town.
Good player, Jamie. Yeah. Combi 2, Union Mills, much like their first team, they just march on. They've made it 5 wins out of 5. It's Town with a 3-0 win over Malou. Owen Shimon backed the brace. Carl Urin's still going strong, backing a goal. He's been kicking about for a few years, hasn't he? Yeah, he's doing well.
Do you remember Joe, the Brazilian that played for Man City in Brazil? Everton. Amongst others. Carl Urin's style of play very much reminds me of him.
In a good way or a bad way?
Well, you can take that. I'll leave it. Joe had a very successful career. So
he did, true. Yeah, Carl's a good player.
So. I am the man that once compared Sean Joel to Cameron Jones, though, so...
Well, yeah, you know, could be mistaken for thinking that, I guess, Second place Governors there, they lost ground on Mills. They went down 2-1 to Wonkin. Ben Kelly and Billy Coulter got the goals for the O's. Kieran Lane netted for Govs. Jims were 2-0 winners over Foxdale. It's a good result for them. Jordan Birchill and Matthew McKeeman got the goals there. Colby, it was another 6-point Saturday for them. They were 3-1 winners over Michael. Furby. Dan Thirlwell, Pete Copley and Jacob Chadwick netted the goals there. And D&D, they're also still enjoying a good start to the season. They're 5-1 winners at Castletown. Rob Mellon, Bam Atapom, Ricky Pearson, Dom Quirk and Jake Turner all grabbing the goals for D&D.
Now, the most important thing, me and Eric, do we need to know, do we need to pack our umbrellas if Saturday?
No.
Okay.
That's your honest answer, hopefully. Friday, mostly cloudy with a spell of rain developed for a tiny afternoon, but it will clear in the evening. It's going to stay clear overnight. Saturday, dry with sunny spells to start with. Possibly rain later on in the evening, so you should be fine during the day.
We heard it here first, Eric.
Excellent news. Can I just add that if Mr. Meppham's not available for Manx Radio, why doesn't David sit in?
I've said
he's
this.
He's done a first-class job.
I will, we'll have to get some sort of transfer fee. A couple of packets of crisps and a Mars bar.
And a pipe, yeah.
That's right, yeah. But yeah, don't be, he's like flipping one of these big super agents. He's like trying to sell me out.
Agent Machines, yeah. Are you the real Agent Machines?
Before we go, we should talk about, aptly enough, a former St George's youngster, Adam Long, who made his third start for Wigan against Fleetwood Town in the Carabao Cup at the weekend. Unfortunately, they lost 3-2. Adam started at centre-half, didn't he, alongside fellow academy graduate, Emmy Obaker. But yes, obviously we've discussed Wigan are a bit of a crisis at the moment. They got relegated, having been docked 12 points. The manager left. They lost a lot of that first team squad that were in the championship last year. But the flip this, it should give Adam and some of the other younger players a bit of a chance in League One this season.
Absolutely. I read the report on the official Wigan site from that match, and it sounds like Adam played really well.
He
played a part in one of the goals for them as well. So it sounds like he's impressing there. So hopefully it's a start of a good season for him.
Current caretaker manager is Liam Richardson, isn't it? I think
yes.
He was assistant there last year.
Yeah.
They will be starting their league campaign, I presume, on Saturday, along with every other league division and other professional leagues in England. So we'll keep our eyes peeled, and we'll be pleased to follow us at Manx40Pod on Twitter and indeed on Facebook, and we'll share any content that Wigan throw our way, won't we?
Perfect.
Well, Eric, all it leaves me to do is say thank you for coming in today. Thanks for telling us about Striving Success. If you're interested in the book, please do hunt down either Paddy or Eric. And we'll, have you got any Eric in the back of the back car?
No, I wasn't trusted with any.
Oh, Egg. Right, okay. But there will be some, I'm sure, at the St George's game on Saturday, won't they?
I'm sure there will, yes.
Clubhouse.
Yes.
Just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with Paddy, his number is 496892.
And if you're in town, they're in the Lexicon, aren't they?
They are.
So thanks again for coming in, Eric. Hope it wasn't too painful.
No.
That's it for this week. Please do, if you've enjoyed this week's podcast, please do tell your friends.
Pass the pod.
Pass the pod, as we're shamelessly ripping off Peter Crouch's Pass the Pod.
Not the first time, it won't be the last time.
No, so please do that. Until next week, then.
To half an hour?